And if I get a call from Tracy in the middle, we'll see. So I'm really happy that the Colwell's Man has ended, because that gave me way more time to prepare this than I normally would have had, which is really important, because the last paragraph of Sefer Shmuel is really, really challenging. So as we'll see some of definitely the problems, especially in the beginning. You know, if you have a problem which is severe enough to stump Rashi, whenever Rashi says, I don't know what's going on, so that's a good sign that you're at least in good company, right? But as we'll see, we're also going to, I think, come away, especially from the end, with a couple of very, very important ideas that come from the concluding parak of Sefer Shmuel Beis, which makes a lot of sense. You would think, after all, right, that the last parak of the Sefer should come away with a really, really important message. So we'll have some challenges. We'll have some cool ideas. As always, if anybody has any thoughts or objections, definitely share. And I'll try as much as I can to keep to the time limit, but we may have to go a little over time because there's a lot to do. We really want to get it in this one shir. So the parak begins with a very mysterious line. Rashi gets stumped in literally the first half of the first pasuk. By Yosef af Hashem lacharos b'Yisrael. Hashem is angry at Bnei Yisrael. We're not told when this is, and we're not told why this is. And then the Navi tells us that because Hashem is angry at Bnei Yisrael, for whatever reason, Hashem entices David to sin. It's clear that David maintains his own free will, but David is enticed to sin. In Divrei Hayamim, the parallel parak, which is mostly parallel, with a few interesting discrepancies, the pasuk says that it was the Satan. You know, who has Satan, who has Yetzer Hara, who Malach HaMaves, all three of which really figure into the story over here, as we'll see. But David is enticed to sin, and that's exactly what David does. David sins, Leich Menei Es Yisrael Ve'es Yehuda. So David is going to take a census of Bnei Yisrael, and that is going to lead to disaster. So off the bat, we need to figure out, number one, why is Hashem angry at Bnei Yisrael? Number two, we're going to need to figure out what exactly is the problem with a census. After all, last week was Parshas Pinchas, and we had a census, right? In Bamidbar, we had a census. In Kisisa, we had a census. The very first Rashi in Sefer Bamidbar, Rashi says that, why are we counting Bnei Yisrael again? It's to show the love that Hashem has for Bnei Yisrael. So it's not clear at all that there should be any problem with a census per se. So mysteries off the bat. Why is Hashem angry at Bnei Yisrael? And what's wrong with David's census? So look at just a couple of ideas, really just to get a sense of the difficulty that the Mefarshim have explaining, especially in the beginning. So Rashi, as we said, says, this one, you know, put this in the Rashi, I don't know, collection. Yosef Hashem HaKadosh B'Yisrael, Lo Yadati Alma. I have no idea. There is no indication in the pasuk. There is no hint. You have to go off the reserve to find something which would get Hashem angry at Bnei Yisrael. And Rashi, who really does stick to the pshat, he has nothing in the psukim. He has nothing in Chazal. There's no medrash. Kind of shockingly, there's no medrash addressing this issue. Okay, so what is he going to do? Ramban addresses this in Parshas Korach, actually, of all places. And the Ramban in Parshas Korach suggests, and look, he says, V'derach Svara, right? He says, Rashi doesn't know. Rashi wrote, Lo Yadati Alma. And I'll say through Svara, and he has an interesting suggestion. He thinks that the punishment for Bnei Yisrael is because they delayed in the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Where is the Ramban getting this from in the Psukim? The idea that Bnei Yisrael delayed in building the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they're getting punished. Well, the Ramban is looking at the cure to figure out what was the disease. At the end of the parak, Hashem is going to tell David to build a mizbeach on Har HaMoriah, which is going to be the point where this is chosen to be determined to be the site for the future Beis HaMikdash. So says the Ramban, basically, if the cure is building or beginning to build the Beis HaMikdash, then it must be that the problem was a failure to do so. And the Ramban has some interesting comments. He says, we know that David had already wanted to do this, and David had been told that you're not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. In Sefer Shmuel, we weren't really told why. In Sefer Divrei Hayamim, we were told it had to do with David being a man of violence. We talked about that a number of months ago. But the Ramban suggests, yeah, but building the Beis HaMikdash, that's not a mitzvah that belongs to the king. It's a mitzvah that belongs to the entire nation. Gemara says, Bnei Yisrael had three mitzvahs as a community when they come into the land of Israel. Number one, to set up a king. Number two, to wipe out Amalek. And number three, to build a Beis HaMikdash. It's a mitzvah for the tzibur. So the Ramban says, hey, B'nai Yisrael, they had, what, 369 years the Mishkan was in Shiloh. They had the whole time of Shaul. And he says, even during the reign of David. Yeah, David himself couldn't build it. But im Shiftei Yisrael hayu misorim b'davar lo hayahu haboneh, avo Yisrael heim hayu haboneh. He suggests that B'nai Yisrael, if they wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash, if they really care about having a Hashem, a house for Hashem in their presence, they could have done so. That is the suggestion of the Ramban, right? To understand why he's saying it. It raises its own difficulties, right? First of all, it's not so clear. I mean, Abarbanel asks, I don't really understand this question, honest, but Abarbanel thinks that the mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash really is incumbent upon the king. After all, David was the one who tried to build the Beis HaMikdash, and Shlomo is the one who really builds it. If you look historically, the king took the lead. So the Abarbanel thinks it really is a mitzvah for the king. Okay, that's less of an objection because the Ramban can really comfortably say it's a mitzvah for the Tzibur. But I don't know, do we ever get like an indication that B'nai Yisrael were lazy in doing this? You have, I guess, the end with David, but it's not so clear that that was a sin. And then why this point in history, right? With all the Shoftim and what, Dafka, the generation where you had the king who wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash and wasn't able to, that's when Hashem all of a sudden punishes us. It's difficult. It's hard to. It's a problem. Just to give a sense, like the Radak says, it must have been chataim nistarim. The Radak throws up his hands and he says it must be that there were hidden sins. Okay, there were some sins, we don't know what they were. Now that's basically the same as Rashi. Rashi says I don't know what they're being punished for, and the Radak says they're being punished for hidden sins, but I don't know what they were. Abarbanel has his own suggestion. The Abarbanel thinks that this is a consequence for the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri. Abarbanel says what B'nai Yisrael did in the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri was really terrible, especially according to the Abarbanel. And we learned about Sheva ben Bichri, we emphasize this perspective, that what he's trying to do is go back to the anarchy of the Shoftim. But his goal, he doesn't want to set up his own kingdom. He just wants to overthrow the Malchus and just Isha Yashar be'inav yaseh, and that's going to lead to disaster. So Abarbanel says that was totally unforgivable, trying to throw off David HaMelech. And that happened once with Avshalom. But now to do it again, and he says, and to do it for somebody who's not even presenting himself as the charismatic son of the king, but totally outside. And he says, number three, with Avshalom, the people were punished. The people did suffer. Many people died in the Avshalom civil war. But here, the people basically got off scot-free, right? Yov went up to evil Beis Macha. They beheaded Sheva, and everyone went home. Everyone had peace. See, Abarbanel, that's the suggestion he makes. See immediately why people would be uncomfortable with that. There is no clear connection in the psukim between Sheva ben Bichri and what's happening over here. Even chronologically, it's not at all clear. It's a total mystery when exactly this episode takes place, before or after the Avshalom rebellion. Right. So you get a sense, just a quick survey of the difficulty to begin. And there's no clear, easy answer, right? You know, Sof Tavar Kol Nishma, it's the reason why Rashi said, Lo Yadati Alma. So be that as it may, but we're not sure why exactly Hashem is angry at the people, we can have a much more productive analysis of is what exactly is happening with David. What is so bad about counting B'nai Yisrael? So the truth is that the very first pasuk, which refers to a count, already tips its hand to this. Because what's the first pasuk of Parshas Kisisa? Kisisa is Rosh B'nai Yisrael, Lefkudehem, B'nasnu Ish Kofer Nafshel Lashem. Each person, now we read this Parshas Shkalim. Oh, it's so nice. Everyone has to get half a shekel. But literally, what is it? Kofer Nafshel, right? A ransom for his life. V'lo Yehabahem Negef Bifkodo Sam. So that there will not be a plague when they are being counted. Why would there be a plague when the counting happens? It's not as a pasuk, right? Little Torah says. So Rashi addresses this, and Rashi says the pshat is that the counting causes the ayin hara, triggers the ayin hara. Now, that's going to need to be explained, which we'll do in a second, but triggers the ayin hara. That Debra Balan, and the ayin hara creates the plague. How does Rashi know this? Moshe Batsina be made David and Shmuel Beis, Baruch Haftalad, our parak, David is going to count the people, and spoiler alert, in a few psukim, there's going to be a plague. Okay, so counting somehow is an ayin hara. Why is counting an ayin hara? Well, now this gets us to the question of what exactly is the ayin hara. So that's a whole book in and of itself. But we can get two basic perspectives already, which really work together just from the Mefarshim right there al Atar. Mefarshim right there on the spot in the Pasuk in Kisisa. Rabbeinu Bechaya has a comment which really gets picked up, you know, in some of the later literature. Especially this was widely discussed in the last few decades in the context of the population census in Israel. Right, this is a huge halachic debate, kind of still is a huge halachic debate. Is the Israeli government allowed to take a census of its citizens? Is one allowed to participate in that census? There's arguments thrown around on both sides. But in that context, and it's one of the things that gets picked up, is what's the problem with being counted in the first place? So Rabbeinu Bechaya explains, I'll tell you why there's this ayin hara idea over here. And especially from the way Rashi is quoting it, it seems clear that it is not a necessarily automatic supernatural reflex. We see that because in the case that Rashi quotes, Hashem is going to tell David, you sinned, and there are three possible consequences, right? So it's clear that this ayin hara really is an ayin hara which is triggering onesh, right? It's the punishment which is causing the plague, not the power of the ayin hara itself, even though many Rishonim definitely believe in such a thing. But that's not what's happening over here. What's happening over here? So says Rabbeinu Bechaya, what's happening when you count the whole people, as he says, so ha'am nifrat minyano kalacha legilgilosam. You are focusing on every individual. And the way that the Midas HaDin works, the Midas HaDin can work on two different levels. The Midas HaDin can work on the level of the individual, and the Midas HaDin can work on the level of the klal. We're much better off, there is safety in numbers. Rav Soloveitchik writes about this in the context of the tshuva of Yom Kippur. We try to shelter ourselves in the kahal, in the community. That's why the vidui of the Kohen Gadol is the vidui for the tzibur. When we focus, when we count the individuals, so that shifts the focus of the hashkacha, the Midas HaDin, to every individual person. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that is why Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin. What's the idea of Rosh Hashanah? Every single person, right? Kivnei Maron. Every one of us has our moments where we are judged individually on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, now that can lead to a whole thought. Is Rosh Hashanah more individual? And Yom Kippur, we then get the Kapara comes for as a Tzibur. In kind of Lakam Laharich. Rabbeinu Bechaya's perspective on the Ayin Hara here is that by highlighting the individual, that exposes the Midas HaDin. Right? Any individual you look too carefully, you can definitely find their flaws. Shadal has another perspective, also right there on the Pasuk. As we'll see, the perspective he takes really leaks into the Ramban's very central comment in the next Mar Makom. Shadal thinks that what's happening with the census over here is he says it's really a natural punishment for consequence. Why? What's the problem? See, right? It's kishadam ones kaspo vezavo. A person counts all his silver and his gold. O kisham melech mone es anshei tzva'o. Right? The king is counting his army. Karov hadavar ma'od sheyeh boteach be'oshro u'riboy chayalav. The problem is excessive self-confidence in his wealth and in his army. V'yeska ebli bo, he's going to get haughty. V'yomar b'kochi v'otzim yad yasisi achayal azeh. So then what happens? The wheel's going to turn. This is a natural consequence. This is how Hashkacha works. Pasuk in Mishlei, Lifnei Shever Gaon. Nowadays, why they quoted, right? Pride comes before the fall. So the natural punishment for the gaiva that David is perpetrating over here, because David is glorying in the size of his army. Well, if you're glorifying in the size of your army, punishment's going to be that army is going to get shrunk. You are going to bring on a plague. So we have Rabbeinu Bechaya looking from the perspective of Midas HaDin. That is what is exciting the Ayin Hara over here. And Shadal suggesting we should just look in the classic terms of Schar Onesh. The Mida Keneged Mida for the Gaiva of counting the nation is a plague comes to reduce the population, which you are taking so much pride in. And instead, that leads into the comment of the Ramban, because the Ramban is trying to explain, right, now that we've understood what can be so damaging about a census in general, we need to go one step further and explain what was so damaging about this census in particular, the Nei Yisrael are being counted all of the time. So the Ramban addresses this, and the Ramban is very bothered by the question. The Ramban has three different explanations in his commentary for why David's census was such a problem. He has one explanation in Parshas Kisisa, and then he gives two more in Parshas Bamidbar. But the one here, I think, is the one which is the closest to the Pshat. It's definitely the one which gets picked up the most. It's also the view of the Radak in a couple of places, including, I think, where we are. And the Ramban explains that this was an unnecessary census. You know, if the census is being done for a good need, then that's one thing. The censuses that are happening in the Chumash are happening because Bnei Yisrael are about to go into Eretz Canaan, and they need to know how big an army they have. They are going to go to war. First time around, that gets messed up by the Meraglim, and so we have to have take two of Parshas Pinchas right before the people go into the land the second time. So Ramban says, what happened with David's census? Rak l'smach libo shemalach al amrav. There is no clear purpose for this census over here. David is not going to war. David has already fought all of his wars. Rather, this census was just to for his own pride, to gloat and enjoy what a large army, a large nation he's ruling over. You see how the Ramban's perspective clearly, right, is bleeding into Shadal's understanding of where the Negev comes from in the first place. So that's one major perspective the Ramban has. Now, the Ramban is assuming that David is not doing this for any other reason. Definitely the way the story is presented in Sefer Shmuel, that makes a lot of sense. The story is presented in Sefer Shmuel in a vacuum. David just wants to count the people. This Yetzer Hara comes and wants him to count the people. No explanation for why that would be. And therefore, they say, okay, it's just because of his own pride. However, the way the story is presented in Divrei Hayamim, the sequence is different. And the question is, does it matter that the sequence is different? Let's remember the big, big difference between Sefer Shmuel in terms of telling the David story and Divrei Hayamim in terms of telling the David story is that Divrei Hayamim cut out the entire Uriah, Bathsheba, Avshalom narrative. Right? Didn't appear whatsoever. We talked about this at the very beginning of the Bathsheba story. Why does this have to be there? It clearly did not have to be there because we have a version of the David story where it doesn't exist. So what Divrei Hayamim does is it talks all about David's conquests. And then instead of taking a break in the middle of the war against Ammon to have the story of Uriah and Bathsheba, it goes straight through the war against Ammon. Then it goes from there to additional battles, the ones we saw very quickly last week against some of the Plishtim. And then it comes straight to our parak. The sequence that you get from Divrei Hayamim is the sense that this census is happening after David just fought all of those battles, right? Which could go together with Sefer Shmuel. As we said, Sefer Shmuel, you cannot tell. You cannot tell, did this census happen before the Avshalom rebellion or did it happen after the Avshalom rebellion? Chronologically, it happens. It's definitely after, you know, the parak is obviously afterwards, but we've seen the previous parakim pretty clearly happened at the beginning of David's reign. Chronology is kind of out the window at the end of Sefer Shmuel. So you have a parish here, the Hoil Moshe, an Italian parish in the 1800s. It's up now on the Ala Torah website. It's quoted also by the Dot Mikra. That's how I found this. So Hoil Moshe, he really does, is he reads Sefer Shmuel with the shot of the sequence in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. He says, David has just fought a whole bunch of wars. Now, why is he counting the army? So he says, why? Because he wants to go to war again, right? He's not happy with just having conquered Edom, Ammon, Moab, Aram, the Plishtim. He wants to conquer more. Of Medan, I saw in his notes, also went in this direction. And that is why Hashem is angry with him over here. Right? So he says, no, there was a reason for David's counting, but it was a bad reason. David now has peace on all of his borders, but he wants to keep fighting. He wants to keep on expanding the borders. He wants to keep on driving the army. And that's it's already going too far. Okay, so really two different perspectives. The Ramban is understanding the problem with David's count was that it was unnecessary. And if that's the case, you're going to say that the ayin hara that's being triggered here is a consequence of his pride. And the whole Moshe is saying the problem is that David is trying to go too far. He's fighting too much. It's time to accept the peace when it's given to you. And that is why the punishment for him is that he's going to lose the army which he keeps on trying to use. Right? You wanted to waste them in war. You're going to waste them without the benefits. Okay. So with that whole background to David's sin. So David, that was all one pasuk. Okay, it's already 128. So we've got some time to go through the parak. We should do it quickly. So David goes to Yoav, and Yoav says, "Count the people." Right. That's a good argument for the Ha'ol Moshe. This is clearly a military mission. Right. He gives it to the general. Now Yoav, as so often happens, when David has a bad idea, Yoav is the one who pushes back. Yoav knows it's a bad idea, and he says, "Don't do this." But the king kind of forces him to. Chazal have an interesting comment about that. Chazal have a line where David's like, "What, are you the king or am I the king?" So for once, David stands up even to Yoav and forces Yoav to do it. But we then have like five psukim here describing in a very winding fashion. It's like Parshas Maaseh, the Jews went from here to there to here to there. All lengthy description of how Yoav and his men count the people. And it takes over 9 months. So Chazal comments about this in the Psikta Rabasi, and they say that what's happening here is that Yoav is trying to draw out the process. That's the pshat here and the extended nature of the count. Yoav is trying to draw out the process to hope that that David will come to his senses. Devar HaYamim adds another piece that Yoav did not count all the Shvatim. He did not count Levi and Binyamin. There's a lot to talk about why those two Shvatim, but let's just move on. That also explains there's a discrepancy in terms of the final census between Divrei Hayam and Sefer Shmuel, but it's because one reason is we're leaving out the actual number that was in these two Shvatim. Okay, so now what happens? David has sinned. We've seen this sin. Seems to be some kind of gaiva or either excessive desire to conquer or too much pride in his own army. Kochi v'otzim yadi. Now what happens when David finally finishes? So the minute the Yetzer Hara leaves you, what always happens, you realize, I made a mistake. Right? As soon as you finish the Aveira, you realize that what you did was wrong. Now, in classic David fashion, so David is not just left with the actually innocent guilt, but David, right, engages in true tshuva, as he always does. It's very fitting that the last parak in Sefer Shmuel is another parak where David makes a mistake and then is doing tshuva, right? As we've said many, many times, it's okay to make a mistake. Once. The problem is when you double down. And with the only exception of Mephibosheth, David never doubles down on a chet. So what does David say? Chatasi ma'od asher asisi, right? I've niskalti ma'od, I've sinned, I've seen very much. Vayakam David ba'boker, he gets up in the morning. But Doc comments about this, that it's clear that David didn't really sleep that night, right? It's not vayashkim David, he didn't wake up. He just gets out of bed. He's been tossing and turning all night, davening and crying for what he's done. And then immediately when he gets there, the same exact pasuk, it's like, he opens the door and boom, here is Gad Hanavi Jose David. And here is Gad. We have not actually seen Gad since Shmuel Aleph, Perek, Chaf Bez, or Chaf Gimel, when he told the fugitive David hiding from Shaul that it's time to leave the fortress in Midbar Yehudah. So apparently he was David's like on call, personal, regular Navi. Radak writes that presumably God had many Nevuot, but they weren't written down because they were personal messages for David. But the only things which are written down in Tanakh are things which are relevant for all generations. So we haven't seen him for a long time until now. What does God say to David? So you have to choose one of three consequences. You choose which one you're going to have. 7 years of famine, and Diriam is 3 years, not sure why, 3 months of being chased by your enemies, or 3 days of plague. What does David say? That's interesting. David does not answer the question, right? His choices were famine, war, or plague, and David says, we all know the pasuk from Tachanun, Vayomer David Agad, Tzarli Ma'od, let's fall in the hand of Hashem because his mercy was so much, and let's not fall in the hand of men. Now, he didn't answer the question, right? He just said, let's fall in the hands of Hashem. So that seems to knock out know, I guess you could read this as David basically not choosing. And you could read the pasuk as David saying, I'll let Hashem make the choice. But Rashi does not go in that direction. Rashi says, well, of these three punishments, only one really is Niplana Biyat Hashem. War, so then you're going to be fighting your enemies. You know, so it's really between you and the enemy soldiers. If you're stronger, if you're better armed, better equipped, better defended, you'll have a better chance of survival. There's no question. The king will have a better chance in surviving a war than the soldier on the front line. Likewise, when it comes to famine, Rashi says, come on, who's more vulnerable in the famine? The king who has palaces and money and granaries, he is obviously far less vulnerable to famine than the peasant farmer who lives on his farm from year to year. It is only the plague, which you do whatever you want, you know, take whatever mitigation activities you want to do. If Hashem sends a dever, you know, no mask is going to protect you from Hashem's dever. I think that we can all agree. It's all whoever Hashem wants to kill, Hashem is going to kill. It is totally up to him. That's how Rashi explains what is going on over here. So Hashem, sure enough, sends the dever, and it's a catastrophe. It kills 70,000 men. The census had said that there were 800,000 men from the other Shvatim and 500,000 from Yehuda. So out of 1.3 million, we're losing 70,000. I'm not sure if this includes women and children or not, but that's a serious proportion. And then the Navi tells us, Vayishlach yado malach Yerushalayim, right? So the Malach HaMaves, this is one of the most explicit references we have to the Malach HaMaves. So he goes to Yerushalayim to destroy it. And then Vaynachem Hashem El Hara'a. As soon as the Malach gets to Yerushalayim, all of a sudden, Hashem changes his mind. Right? Why does he change his mind? We'll see in a second. It's enough. Hold back your hand. Where was the king of the Malach? Malach Hashem Haya. Im Ur Gorin Aravna Hayavusi. He was at the barn of Aravna the Yavusi. Now, the way the Dat Mikra explains how to read these psukim is the reason why Hashem changes his mind is because of the next pasuk. It's the thing you have to kind of read what's happening next to understand why it's happening over here. Why Vayinachem Hashem al Arav? Because the Yomer David al Hashem Barosas Malach Makeva Am Yomer Hinei Enochi Chatasi Enochi Avesi VeLetzon Maasu Tehi Nayad Chabi VeSavi. As soon as David sees the Malach approaching Yerushalayim, he's davening to Hashem. Divrei Hayamim kind of expands on this. He and his men are wearing sackcloth. They're davening. I imagine that they're fasting. So that Mikra explains that it is the tefillah of David over here which causes Hashem to change his mind as the Malach reaches Yerushalayim. Okay, we'll suggest another possibility in just 1 second. So the God then comes back to David a second time, and he says, build a mizbeach in this threshing floor of Aravna the Yevusi. The Yevusim who had owned Yerushalayim, they've all been thrown out of Yerushalayim, or at least they're no longer in charge of Yerushalayim. But apparently, David, probably not so surprising, because you know David is a pretty nice guy, especially nice to his enemies. So David has allowed them to keep a lot of the land. And there's this big, beautiful threshing floor outside Yerushalayim, up on the mountain Har HaMoriah. And Aravna, the old Yebusi, is still there owning, running the farm. Okay. So what to do with all this? So at this point, there's a very, very, very important parallel, which Maidan I saw draws, the Dat Mikra Yehuda Kiel draws, I'm sure others draw as well. That by now we really need to take note of. As we'll see, Chazal did this as well. We know where exactly this is happening, right? The Divrei Hayam Pasuk tells us, which mountain is this? Bechashlam alufnei alavdos es beis Hashem Yerushalayim, behar hamoriya, asher nira leDavid aviu. Right? So the Goren of Aravna Hayavusi, in Divrei Hayam, he's Arnon. Slightly different, but okay, whatever. But we know that this mountain is Har HaMoriah. It's not just any mountain. Once we know that the mountain is Har HaMoriah, so immediately we for sure have to ask and we have to wonder, are there any links that the Navi draws between Akedas Yitzchak and the Parsha over here. And you don't need to scratch the surface to see that the links are all over the place. And that's okay. Count that Mikra, he organized like 13 different ones. Okay, some are more compelling than others. But the basic theme, we don't need to dig deep to find. Okay, it's at the it's at Har Moria. As far as I know, Hashem chooses this to be a special location, right? It was the place that he showed Abraham to build his Mizbeach. It's the place that he shows David to build his Mizbeach. Do we ever have another time where Hashem says to anybody, I don't think we do, where Hashem says, go to place X and build a Mizbeach there. You know, Yaakov wakes up in the middle of the night and he realizes he's on a holy land. Now, if we think that Beisel is Har HaMoriah, it's all the same place. But even if it's not, Yaakov was never told to go there and build Mizbeach. And if it is the same place, then it's all great. Har HaMoriah is the only place we're told, go there, and that is the spot where you are going to build a Mizbeach. Okay, and then it continues. The line here, Rav Ata, Haref Yadecha, hold back your hand. You can't read that and help but think of Avraham and Yitzchak, and Hashem, the Malach, telling Abraham, right, Al tishlach yadcha el hanar v'atas lo me'uma. Hold your hand back from the lad. He points out the line, many, many words the same. Va'even is Be'ach, building the Beis HaMikdash. Be'er Sheva comes up in both places. Getting up in the morning is something we have. 3 days is a theme. Sheep and sticks, okay, fine. The population of Israel. What's the reward that Hashem says to Yaakov, to Avram, sorry, right? He mentions the Akedah that they're going to be like the sand of the star. They're going to be like the sand is one of the brachos that that Hashem gives Abraham after the Akedah. What happens? Hashem sees. Hashem says, Ra'ah Hashem, the Rambam says. Hashem saw, and then Vayinachem al hara. Well, of course we know what is Avraham name the place when he's at Har HaMoriah. He says, right, Bahar, he says, the place where Asher Yomerayim Bahar Hashem Yireh. It's a place where Hashem saw. Hashem sees on Har HaMoriah. The Gemara and Brachos clearly picks up on this. So this is what Pasuk said, right? Ra'ah Hashem Be'nachim. Hashem saw and he changed his mind. Now, what did he see? Myra, what did he see? Okay, so that Mikra suggests that he saw David's tefillot. We can take that, but not the only thing. The Gemara gives 4 different suggestions. The first suggestion the Gemara gives from Rav is that he saw Yaakov Avin. Okay, given all of the parallels we've seen from David's whole career to Yaakov Avinu, we can understand why in this moment the Dmus Diukno of Yaakov Avinu would come flying up to the Rav Asher. Okay, but then Shmuel Amar, a pharaoh shall Yitzchak, brother. He saw the ashes of Yitzchak. Shneamar, Elokim Yireh, Lo Haseh, right? Yireh Hashem Yireh, Lo Haseh. Well, Yitzchak says, where's the sheep? And Hashem's Avram says to Yitzchak, Hashem will see the sheep. So I think what the Gemara is saying is, what does that mean? Hashem will see? No one else can see because Yitzchak never actually gets burned. But Hashem sees Yitzchak virtually as the sheep that was burned. Hashem yir elo hasalo labini. Hashem's going to consider my son as having been a sheep. Abraham has a nevuah, doesn't realize what it was that he was saying. Why is Shmuel bringing up the ash of Yitzchak? The Gemara gives two additional answers. One, that Hashem saw the future machatis hashakel that Bnei Yisrael would bring in this place. And two, he saw all the karbanos they were going to bring. And it's interesting, the Gemara puts more attention on those two answers. But of all 4 answers that are out there, which one does the Radak highlight? The Radak highlights the Yitzchak answer right over here. Divrei Rabbi Hoseinu Zal, Ma ra'u efaro shel Yitzchak, ki ba'osar garen hala Avram Yitzchak beno. This is a place where Akedas Yitzchak happened. Why is the Radak highlighting that answer about the Akedah? Why is Shmuel Gemara, why is Chazal presenting that answer about the Akedah? Because the Akedas Yitzchak, that is the space where this Bechira is happening. And the broader idea is that we now have, for the second time, the sanctification of Har HaMoriah as the place to connect to the Riba Mishal. Right. We'll talk more about that in a second when we finish the parak. What exactly is the difference between the selection of Har HaMoriah at Akedas Yitzchak and the selection of Har HaMoriah here in Sefer Shmuel? What is being added to the story? We'll see when we get to the end of the parak. Okay, I put down here all, you know, you have many, many more. He points out, Lashon Atira Ba'ah, Vayatar Hashem La'aretz, when Hashem forgives the land. So it's a weird phrase. The Navi is going to say that Vayatar Hashem La'aretz. We know Vayatar means to daven. Vayatar Yitzchak La'Hashem. So he suggests that once again, we're raising the vision of Yitzchak. Okay, a lot more to say. Now let's just bring it home with the rest of the parak. So Avram, David now goes to Aravna. Right, again, the Yehusi. So Aravna bows down. He's very subservient to David, as he should be. So Aravna says, what are you doing here? David says, I'm here to buy the Goren to build a Mizbeach for Hashem, to stop the plague. Okay, so Aravna says, no problem. Why don't you take all my stuff? You can take the cattle, you can take the wooden tools, threshing tools, and the yoke, use it to have an instant Mizbeach. I'm a fan of stopping the plague. So Aravna is very nice. He offers everything for free to offer an immediate carbon. And notice that he assumes that we're going to offer a carbon ola. Okay. Right. So now David says, no, thank you. I'm going to buy it from you. Kano ekne me'oschab mechir, on a pay for it with good money. And he does so. He buys it with 50 shekels. The Rehiyamim says he bought it with 600 shekels. Why? Because 50 times 12 is 600, and David has 50 of his own, but then he has 50 representing each one of the Shvatim. Now, you know, it doesn't take a genius to realize that another thing the Navi is doing here is reminding us of the story of Avraham purchasing Maras HaMachpelah from Ephron Hethi. Bazak talks about this in his VBM article. The take he has on it is that, you know, we're seeing how far we've come. Avraham was Toshav, Ger B'Toshav Ani Imachem, but here the king, we end Sefer Shmuel with like the statement of clear Jewish sovereignty. David is the Melech, and the person comes to him totally subservient, unless, right, David pays good money. So we've come very far from the days of Avraham. Okay, it's also probably not a coincidence that we have the story right after Akedas Yitzchak of Maras HaMachpelah being brought up, together with this passage over here. We're really trying once again to drive home that you should be thinking of Akedas Yitzchak when you read this story. Then David builds the Mizbeach. Okay, Vayatar Hashem La'aretz, and then the Sefer concludes, Vatayatzer Hamagefa Me'al Yisrael. The plague was stopped from Israel. So two things we should say to close up the parak and to close up the Sefer. Number one, at first glance, this sounds like a bit of a downer to end the Sefer, no? Like, really, we end Vatayatzar HaMagifa Me'al Yisrael? No, we couldn't have come up with something. Ah, the plague ended. Sefer Shmuel is an amazing Sefer. We've come so far from the days of Peleg Shmegiva and the sons of Eli. This is how we end it. So we have to understand, I think, what it means for the plague to end. And we have to understand, why is it that Hashem is specifically having the Malach stop at this exact spot? This phrase, Vatayatzer Magifa, comes up one other time, I think, in Parshas Korach. If you recall, the Magifa that happened there after Bnei Yisrael are still rebelling, even after Korach and his assembly have been destroyed, Moshe sends Aaron to take the Ketores out into the middle of the camp. And by doing so, Aaron is able to stop the plague. Why is it the Ketores that's able to stop the plague? So, just a bit of a promo. I think a couple months before Yom Kippur, planning on doing like an introduction to the Avoda of Yom Kippur Shir. So hopefully everyone can make that. I'm not sure what night's going to be, but look alive in like a month and a half. We know the first step of the Avoda of Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol comes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim the first time, he brings the Ketores. One way of understanding that is the purpose of the Ketores is to invite the presence of the Shechina. And one way to understand what is happening with Moshe and Aaron and the Ketores is that what stops the Dever, what stops the Magefa, is the Hashras HaShechina. Right? It's not Hashem who causes the Magefa. It is the presence of Hashem which stops the Magefa. It is the Malach HaMaves, right? The Malach HaMashchis here in the Perek, who brings the death and destruction. The Shechina is there to protect, to defend against the Magefa. That's why Moshe sends Aaron out with the Ketores into the middle of the camp. That's why the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when Pinchas stops the Magefa, the Gemara describes him doing virtually the exact same procedure that Aaron did, except he doesn't have Ketores. He has Zimri and Kazi. That's another story. That's why when Makas Bechoros takes place, this is the most central example of it all. So we know the Pasachti Aleichem. What does that mean to be Poseach? So Rashi, if you look at Unklus, Unklus says it really means to hover over, right? To hover, to protect. I think Rav Meidan has an article about this. I think it was something said this, but other people definitely do as well. We're hearing this idea, it's very powerful. One way to think of Makas Bechoros is that Hashem is protecting the Jewish houses with the Hashras HaShechina, while the Mashchis, the destroying force, which Hashem references in the Pasuk, Lo Yebehem Negev LeMashchis, Bakosib Eretz Yisrayim, that's running around. Hashem's presence protects from the Magefa. That's happening with Makas Bechoros. That's happening with Korach. And that's happening over here. When we see that Hashem, Me'ater Hashem La'aretz, Bateyatzir Magefa Me'al Yisrael, what that is telling us is that the Shechina is dwelling on Har HaMoriah. The Shechina dwells on Har HaMoriah. That is why that is the spot where the Magefa, where the plague ends. And that, if that's the case, so the Navi is really ending with, yes, David was not able to build the Beis HaMikdash, but the process is already happening. Number one, the Mizbeach has been built. David's been ordered to build the Mizbeach, and Hashem Shechina is already dwelling on the place. It's already in Yerushalayim, even before Hashem, even before King Shlomo actually builds the physical bias, right? You don't need a physical bias for the Shras HaShechina, and it's already happening here. Fine. Last point. What is being added? Why do we have to have an additional choosing of Har HaMoriah? Didn't it already happen one other time? So the Dat Mikra has an insight, but we should push it further than he does. Aravna tells David, take my cattle and offer it for an olah. The king says to Aravna, no, no deal. I don't agree. I am not going to take it for free, right? I'm going to pay for it. Velo ala l'Hashem elokai olos chinam. I'm not going to offer to Hashem olos for free. Okay, so David buys the animals. Happens to be a whole sugya in the Gemara, buying animals from presumably a pagan for karbanos. Is that acceptable or not? But the whole discussion here, right? Why don't you offer the ola? And David says, no, I'm not going to offer Hashem an ola. Then we have a big surprise. Even Shem David is Be'ach L'Hashem. Vayal olos u'shlamin. So David offers the ola, which we had expected, which we had anticipated, which had been discussed, which had been introduced by Aravna and talked about by David. Then all of a sudden, David, unasked, unaccounted for, all of a sudden also offers a carbon shlamin. Why is David offering a carbon shlamin? No one ever mentioned a carbon shlamin. A carbon shlamin, that's the peace offering, right? There's no kapara involved. There's no atonement in a carbon shlamin. You would think this is not the time. Carbon chatas, carbon asham, those maybe. You know, the carbon ola makes a lot of sense. There's kapara for the ola. The ola is just the carbon of subservience. But David also adds the shlamin. What's happening here? The theme of ola comes up again and again and again in Akedas Yitzchak from the very beginning, right? Valeo sham le'ola. And it's mentioned many other times in the passage as well. The idea is that Yitzchak is going to, Hashem says, I want a carbon ola. Avram thinks he's going to offer Yitzchak as a carbon ola. He's ready to offer him as a carbon ola. And then after Hashem says not to do so, he offers the ram as the carbon ola instead.
makes a lot of sense, because the carbon ola is the ultimate act of subservience, right? I obey. I am totally submissive to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I just offer up everything. There's no partnership here. There's no eating of the meat. It's kadshei kadashim. The ola symbolizes the infinite distance between man and the Ribbono Shel Olam. I just send it. I offer it up. The shlamim really is the exact opposite. The shlamim is the karban, which emphasizes the closeness between a person and the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's the partnership offering. Hashem eats some of the basar, the kohanim eats some of the meat, the owner eats some of the meat. The karban shlamim always is the karban of ava. It's the karban of establishing a covenant, of establishing a bris. There's a reason why the paradigmatic karban shlamim is the karban Pesach, which is all about the relationship between Hashem and between Bnei Yisrael, where every single house turns into a miniature Beis HaMikdash. That's the case, then we can identify the additional layer which David is putting onto, or which Hashem wants David to put into, the selection of Har HaMoriah. The original selection of Har HaMoriah is done in the context of Yiras Shamayim, accepting whatever the decree is, submitting, no questions asked, doing what Hashem wants, no matter how painful, unconditional loyalty, unconditional obedience. Yira is the total theme of the day. Now, right, Midas HaDin, Yira, Yitzchak as the epitome of Gevura, it all totally fits with Akedas Yitzchak. So I read Akedas Yitzchak on Rosh Hashanah. What is the second Hakdasha of Har HaMoriah? Building on the first one, it is not a message of total obedience. I mean, it starts with David sinning, right? It starts with David doing something that he wasn't supposed to do. What do we have here? We have tshuva, we have rachamim, and we have ava. Right? The halacha is that a non-Jew is only allowed to bring a carbon shlam, a carbon ola, sorry. Gemara says, libo l'shamayim. So wait, the person who doesn't have, you know, the whole Masorah thinks that the relationship with an infinite God is the one of infinite distance, right? So even if he declares he's going to bring a carbon shlamim, he'll bring it as a carbon ol. The idea that you could somehow have the infinite yira and distance and respect and awe of the carbon ola while also having the closeness of the carbon shlamim, that is the innovation of Yadus for Bnei Yisrael Kedushas Yisrael. The whole intimacy that we see David have in Sefer Tehillim, in so many of the passages we've seen in our Limud of Sefer Shmuel, David is the paradigmatic example of the person who understands what it means to have that relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. So to have Har HaMoriah be selected as the ultimate place of the Beis HaMikdash, first by Avraham and Yitzchak, with the emphasis on Yira and the Karban Ola, then followed by David HaMelech, who sins, but does tshuva, right? Hopes for and davens for the rachamim, right? Rabim rachamav, just wants mercy from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and then who offers the carbon ola, the carbon of yira, together with the carbon shlamim, together with the carbon of ava, and of racham, and of closeness. So it is those two that go together. That now is the goal. Now we have the Beis HaMikdash, which is the perfect place. But the Beis HaMikdash is not only for people who are perfect. The Beis HaMikdash is also for people who have sinned and are trying to repair the relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. And you may hesitate and think, can I really come to this lofty place? Can I approach Hashem? Is that at all possible? How can I come to a Beis HaMikdash? I'm not Avraham Avinu. I'm not Yitzhak Avinu. And so we need to have the second identification of this place, the second sanctification done by the person who is the ultimate example of tshuva, the Baal tshuva, and that is David HaMelech, who selects and builds the Mizbeach for this in an act of tshuva in and of itself. So this really is the perfect capstone to Sefer Shmuel, right? Which theologically we talked about from the beginning, the main idea, Chana's main idea. Do you believe in Hashem's total hakol yachol, right? It doesn't matter how strong, mighty you are, Hashem can do whatever he wants. That was the unconditional Yirah Shamayim, the total acceptance that Hashem is infinitely powerful. Now, as we saw, you know, Shmuel had that message, Jehonasan had that message, and David had that message. But as we get more and more into the David part of the story, the second contribution we have is to also realize the Rachamim piece. To also realize that tshuva is always possible, and that there are no limits, just like there's no limits on Hashem, there's no limit on Hashem's ability to forgive the person who comes back. And so it is specifically in an act of tshuva that David is able to build a Mizbeach, which kicks off Hashras HaShechina and sets this up as the future place for the Beis HaMikdash, right? So we begin Sefer Shmuel with just total awe and reverence and respect for Hashem, and we end with the image of them together, the Ola, together with the Shlamim, brought by the person who tries so hard, makes the mistakes, but does total tshuva. In the end, Vayaser Hashem La'aretz Vatayaser Magifah Mayal Yisrael, the plague is gone, Hashem forgives us, and Hashem is still in our presence, and really at the end of the Sefer, more than he ever had been before. So, anyone has any thoughts? Love to hear.
Thank you so much.